Chapter 29. Rescued. Miss Havisham's extraction of Thursday from the Goliath Vault is the stuff that legends are built on. The thing was, not only had no one ever done it before, no one had even thought of doing it before. It put them both on the map and earned Havisham her 8th cover on the jurisfiction trade paper Movable Type, and Thursday her 1st. It cemented the bond between them. In the annals of jurisfiction, there were notable partnerships such as Beowulf and Sneed, Falstaff and Tiggywinkle, Voltaire and Flark. That night, Havisham and Next emerged as one of the greatest pairings jurisfiction would ever see. Unitary Authority of Warrington Cat, Jurisfiction Journals. The most noticeable thing about being locked in a vault 12 floors below ground at the Goliath R&D lab was not the isolation, but the silence. There was no hum of air conditioning, no odd snatch of conversation heard through the door, nothing. I thought about Landon, about Miss Havisham, Joffy, Miles, and then the baby. What, I wondered, did Shithouse have in store for him? I got up and paced around the vault, which was lit by harsh strip lights. There was a large mirror on the wall that I had to assume was some kind of watching gallery. There was a toilet and shower in a room behind, and a bedroll and a few toiletries in a locker that someone had left out for me. I spent 20 minutes searching the few nooks and crannies of the room, hoping to find a discarded trashy novel or something that might effect me an escape. There was nothing, not so much as a pencil shaving, let alone a pencil. I sat on the only chair, closed my eyes and tried to visualize the library and remember the description in my travel book. And I even recited aloud the opening passage to A Tale of Two Cities, something I had learned at school many years ago. My book-jumping skills were non-existent without a text to read from, but there was nothing to lose. So I tried every quote, passage, and poem I had ever committed to memory from Ovid to De La Mer. When I ran out of those, I switched to limericks, and ended up telling Bowden's jokes out loud. Nothing. Not so much as a flicker. I unrolled the bedroll, lay on the floor and closed my eyes, hoping to remember Landon again and discuss the problem with him. It wasn't to be. At that moment, the ring that Miss Havisham had given me grew almost unbearably hot. There was a sort of whoppish noise, and a figure was standing next to me. It was Miss Havisham, and she didn't look terribly pleased. Before I could tell her how relieved I was to see her, she pointed a finger at me and said, "You, young lady, are in a lot of trouble." "Tell me about it." This wasn't the sort of careless remark she liked to hear from me, and she certainly expected me to jump to my feet when she arrived, so she rapped me painfully on the knee with her stick. "Ow!" I said, getting the message and rising. "Where did you spring from?"
"Havishams come and go as they please," she replied imperiously. "Why on earth didn't you tell me?"
I didn't think you'd approve of me leaping into a book on my own, especially not Poe," I muttered sheepishly, expecting a tirade of abuse, Vesuvius, in fact. But it didn't happen. Miss Havisham's ire was from quite a different direction.
"I couldn't care less about that," remarked Miss Havisham haughtily.
"What you do in your own time to cheap reprints is no concern of mine."
"Oh," I said, contemplating her stern features and trying to figure out what I had done wrong.
"You should have said something," she said, taking another pace towards me.
"About the baby?" I stammered.
"No, idiot! About Cardenio!"
"Cardenio?" There was a faint clank from the door as someone fiddled with the lock. Havisham's arrival, it seemed, had been observed.
"It'll be chalk and cheese," I told her. "You'd better jump out of here."
"Absolutely not," replied Havisham. "We go together. You might be a complete and utter imbecile, but you are my responsibility. Trouble is, 14 feet of concrete is slightly daunting. I'm going to have to read us out. Quick, pass me your travel book."
They took it from me. The door opened and Shithouse entered. He was grinning fit to burst.
"Well, well," he said. "Lock up a book jumper and another soon joins her."
He took one look at Havisham's old wedding dress and put two and two together.
"Goodness! Is that Miss Havisham?"
As if in answer, Havisham whipped out her small pistol and fired it in his direction. Shithouse gave a yelp and leaped back out the door, which clanged shut.
We need a book, said Miss Havisham grimly. Anything will do, even a pamphlet.
There's nothing in here, Miss Havisham. She looked around.
Are you sure? There must be something.
I've looked, there's nothing. Miss Havisham raised an eyebrow and looked me up and down.
Take off your trousers, girl, and don't say what, in that impudent manner. Do as you're told.
So I did, and Havisham turned the garment over in her fingers as she searched for something.
There!
She cried triumphantly as the door opened and a hissing gas canister was lobbed in. I followed her gaze, but she had found only the washing label. I must have looked incredulous, for she said in an offended manner,
It's enough for me!
And then repeated out loud,
Wash inside out, wash and dry separately, wash inside out, wash and dry separately.
We surfed in on the pungent smell of washing detergent and overheated iron. The landscape was dazzling white and was without depth. My feet were firmly planted on the ground, yet I could see nothing but white surrounding my shoes when I looked down, the same as the view above me and to either side. Miss Havisham, whose dirty dress seemed even more shabby than usual in the white surroundings, was looking around the lone inhabitants of this strange and empty world. 5 bold icons the size of garden sheds that stood neatly in a row like standing stones. There was a crude tub with the number 60 on it, an iron shape, a tumble dryer shape, and a couple of others that I wasn't too sure about. I touched the first icon, which felt warm to the touch and very comforting. They all seemed to be made of compressed cotton.
What were you saying about Cardenio?
I asked, still wondering why she was so angry.
Yes, yes, Cardenio!
She replied crossly, examining the large washing icons with interest.
Just how likely was it for a pristine copy of a missing play to just pop up out of the blue like that?
You mean, I said, the penny finally dropping, it's a great library copy?
Of course it's a library copy! That fog-headed pantaloon Snell only just reported it, and we need your help to get it back. What are these big shape things?
Iconographic representations of washing instructions, I told her as I put my trousers back on.
Hmm, responded Miss Havisham. This could be tricky. We're inside a washing label, but there are none of those in the library. We need to jump into a book, which is. I can do it without text, but I need a target book to head for. Is there a book written about washing labels?
Probably, I replied,
but I've no idea what it might be called.
I had an idea.
Does it have to be a book about washing labels?
Havisham raised an eyebrow, so I carried on.
Washing machine instructions always carry these icons, explaining what they mean.
Hmm, said Miss Havisham thoughtfully. Do you have a washing machine?
Fortunately, I did, and more fortunately still, it was one of the things that had survived the sideslip. I nodded excitedly.
Good. Now, more important, do you know the make and model?
Hoover Electron 1000, no, 800 Deluxe, I think.
Think? You think? You'd better be sure, girl, or you and I will be nothing more than carved names on the Bouge Memorial. Now, are you sure?
Yes, I said confidently. Hoover Electron 800 Deluxe.
She nodded, placed her hands on the tub icon and concentrated hard, teeth clenched and her face red with effort. I took hold of her arm, and for a moment or two in which I could feel Miss Havisham shake with exertion, we had jumped out of the washing label and into the Hoover instructions.
Don't allow the drain hose to kink as this could stop the machine from emptying,
said a small man in a blue Hoover boiler suit standing next to a brand new washing machine. We were standing in a sparkling clean washroom that was barely 10 feet square. It had neither windows nor door, just a Belfast sink, tiled floor, hot and cold inlet taps and a single plug on the wall. For furniture, a bed was pushed against the corner and next to it was a chair, table and cupboard.
Do remember that to start a program you must pull out the program control knob. Sorry,
he said.
I'm being read at the moment. I'll be with you in a sec. If you have selected white nylon, minimum iron, delicate, or...
Thursday,
said Miss Havisham, who suddenly seemed weak at the knees and whose face had turned the same colour as her wedding dress.
That took quite some...
I just managed to catch her as she collapsed. I gently laid her down on the small truckle bed.
Miss Havisham, are you okay?
She patted my arm encouragingly, smiled, and closed her eyes. I could see she was pleased with herself, even if the jump had worn her out. I pulled the single blanket over her, sat on the edge of the low bed, pulled my hair tie out and rubbed my scalp. My trust in Havisham was implicit, but it was still a bit unnerving to be stuck in Hoover instructions.
Until the drum starts to rotate, your machine will empty and spin to complete the program. Hello,
said the man in the boiler suit.
The name's Cullards. I don't often get visitors.
Thursday next, I told him, shaking his hand. This is Miss Havisham of Jurisfiction.
Goodness,
said Mr. Cullards, scratching his shiny bald head and smiling impishly.
Jurisfiction, eh? You are off the beaten track. The only visitor I've had was... Excuse me. Control setting D. White's economy, lightly soiled cotton or linen articles which are colour fast to boiling. Was the time we had a new supplement regarding woolens, but that would have been 6 or 7 months ago. Where does the time go?
He seemed a cheerful enough chap. He thought for a moment and then said,
Would you like a cup of tea?
I thanked him, and he put the kettle on.
So, what's the news?
Asked Mr. Cullards, rinsing out his one and only cup.
Any idea when the new washing machines are due out?
I'm sorry, I said. I've no idea.
I'm about ready to move on to something a bit more modern. I started on vacuum cleaner instructions, but was promoted to Hoover-Matic T5004, then transferred to the Electron 800 after twin-tub obsolescence. They asked me to take care of the 1100 Deluxe, but I told them I'd sooner wait until the Logic 1300 came out.
I looked around at the small room. Don't you ever get bored?
Not at all,
said Cullards, pouring the hot water into the teapot.
Once I've put in me 10 years, I'm eligible to apply for work in all domestic appliance instructions. Food mixers, liquidizers, microwaves, who knows? If I work really hard, I could make it into television or wireless. That's the future for an ambitious manual worker. Milk and sugar?
Please. He leaned closer.
Management have this idea that only young'uns should do sound and vision instructions, but they're wrong. Most of the kids in VCR manuals barely do 6 months in Walkmans before they're transferred. It's little wonder no one can understand them.
I never thought of that before, I confessed. We chatted for the next half hour. He told me he had begun French and German classes so he could apply for work in multilingual instructions, then confided in me his fondest feelings for Tabitha Dohook, who worked for Kenwood Mixers. We were just talking about the sociological implications of labour-saving devices within the kitchen and how they related to the women's movement when Miss Havisham stirred.
Compeyson!
She muttered without waking.
You lying, stealing, thieving hound of a...
Miss Havisham? I asked. She stopped mumbling and opened her eyes.
Next, my girl,
she gasped.
I need...
Yes? I asked, leaning closer.
A cup of tea!
Can do,
said Mr. Cullards, cheerfully pouring out a fresh cup. Miss Havisham sat up, drank 3 cups of tea and also ate the biscuit that Cullards was reserving for his birthday next May. I introduced the Hoover instructionalist, and Miss Havisham nodded politely before announcing we would have to be off. We said our goodbyes, and Mr. Cullards made me promise I would clean out the powder dispenser on my washer. In an unguarded moment, I had let slip. I had yet to do so, despite the washers being nearly 3 years old. The short trip to the non-fiction section of the Great Library was an easy jump for Miss Havisham. And from there we warped back into her dingy ballroom in Great Expectations, where the Cheshire Cat and Harris Tweed were waiting for us, talking to Estella. The cat seemed quite relieved to see us both, but Harris simply scowled.
Estella!
Said Miss Havisham abruptly.
Please don't talk to Mr. Tweed!
Yes, Miss Havisham, replied Estella meekly. Havisham replaced her trainers with the less comfortable wedding shoes.
I have Pip waiting outside, said Estella slightly nervously. If you will excuse me mentioning it, Mom is a paragraph late.
Dickens can just flannel for a bit longer,
replied Havisham,
I must finish with Miss next.
She turned to me with a grim look. I thought I'd better say something to soothe her. I hadn't yet seen Havisham lose her temper, and I was in no hurry to do so.
Thank you for my rescue, ma'am, I said quickly. I'm very grateful to you.
Humph, replied Miss Havisham. Don't expect salvation from me every time you get yourself into a jam, my girl. Now, what's all this about a baby?
The Cheshire Cat, sensing trouble, vanished abruptly on the pretext of some cataloguing. And even Tweed mumbled something about checking Lorna Doone for grammar sites and went too.
Well?
Asked Havisham again, peering at me quite intensely. I didn't feel quite as frightened of her as I once did, so I thought I should come clean and tell her everything. I told her all about Landon's eradication, the offer from Goliath, Jack Shit in the Raven, and even Mycroft's prose portal. Just for good measure, I finished up by telling her how much I was in love with Landon and how I'd do anything to get him back.
For love? Pah! She answered,
dismissing Estella with a wave of her hand in case the young woman got any ideas.
And what, in your tragically limited experience, is that?
She didn't seem to be losing her temper, so emboldened, I continued. I think you know, ma'am. You were in love once, I believe.
Stuff and nonsense, girl!
Isn't the pain you feel now the equal to the love you felt then?
You're coming perilously close to contravening my rule, too.
I'll tell you what love is, I told her. It is blind devotion, unquestioning self-humiliation, utter submission, trust and belief against yourself and against the whole world, giving up your whole heart and soul to the smiter.
That was quite good, said Havisham, looking at me curiously. Could I use that? Dickens won't mind.
Of course.
I think, said Miss Havisham after a few moments of deliberation, that I shall categorize your complex marital question under widowed, which sits with me well enough. Upon reflection, and quite possibly against my better judgment, you may stay as my apprentice. That's all. You are needed to help retrieve Cardenio. Go.
So I left Miss Havisham in her darkened chamber with all the trappings of her wedding that never was. In the few days I had known her, I had learned to like her a great deal, and hoped some day I might repay her kindness and match her fortitude.